Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Highland Outlaw by Heather McCollum. Narrated by Justine Eyre. To Laird Shaw Sinclair, 7th Earl of Caithness. The infant who journeys under the protection of this letter is of strong health, yet might succumb to an assassin's poison. Therefore, she must be taken to safety, shielded by the fierce Sinclair clan. Take the child to the ruins of St. Andrew's Castle, where a ship will ferry her over to France to be raised in secret until such time as she can be claimed. In return for your service, Castle Gernigo and the lands historically kept by the Sinclair clan will be retaken from Edgar Campbell of Glenorchy to be returned to Clan Sinclair. The child must arrive alive to the ship before the winter snows blanket the Highlands. May God, in his ultimate wisdom and power, guide you and see that you protect this very important child. 20 October, 1685. Chapter 1. 31 October, 1685. West of Moulin, at the base of the Grampian Mountains, Scottish Highlands. "Ooh," Cece McInnes whispered, her eyes round as if lusting after a honey tart. "With this fine weather, the men will be tossing off their tunics along with tossing those capers." She bounced up and down on her toes and hurried to keep up with Alanna Campbell. "Evelyn would tell you to behave," Alanna said, but smiled over her friend's excitement. "That we are here merely to promote the school, not to ogle the men." "Fortunate for us, then, that Evelyn is travelling with Scarlett and Nathaniel back to England right now to ready Holling's estate for lease," Kirsten MacGregor, Alana's best friend, said next to her. Martha Campbell giggled. "So we can ogle all we want," she linked arms with Cece. "Very well," Alana said, "but no getting carried off, wed or with child." They all burst out laughing as they nodded their agreement of the pact. Together, the small group of Highland Roses School students strode across the meadow filled with representatives from various clans, their wolfhound jogging along beside them. It was the last day of October, and Solmen would begin when the sun sank below the line of mountains. The more senior students had travelled to the annual Solmen Festival at the base of Beinn Nevis, the tallest mountain in the grand, sweeping Grampian Mountains. Men, women and children moved about in clusters as the clans competed, their tents set up by clan to ring the meadow in a colourful display of kinship pride. Alanna, sister of Grey Campbell, the chief of the Campbells of Breadalbane, glanced across the meadow to the men who walked along the line of stout tree trunks. Some of the cabers weighed over 180 pounds and stood to 22 feet high. Izzy Campbell, the youngest of their group at 12 years old, jabbed her finger toward the far end of the field. Izzy was mute, an affliction that had struck her when her parents died several years ago. Alanna followed the girl's motion to see a cluster of dogs across the trampled field. "I see them," Alanna said, smiling down at the girl. "I think Robert will beat them all in the competition, don't you?" Izzy nodded vigorously, her hand patting the head of the large wolfhound, who stared up with bright brown eyes. Shaggy grey, strong and possessing the most playful expression, Robert made a wonderful companion, even though he still didn't follow commands well when he became flustered and excited. He was also huge, standing well over Alana's head when on his back paws, which deterred villains who might not have heard that the Highland Rose students were always armed and ready for defensive attack. Cece whistled low. "Look at him," she said, brushing her red hair back from her pretty round face to tuck behind her ears. She jutted out her chin toward the far field. "He is a brawn fellow and so tall." Her assessment ended with a dramatic sigh. The group of men opened a path to allow the warrior to enter the field where three other men dropped a long, thick caper. He was broad and towering, the muscles obvious in his bare arms, where dark lines formed a picture on his tan skin. He wore a kilt and a sleeveless tunic with the autumn sun covering the scene with golden warmth. Alanna caught the toe of her boot in her skirt and stumbled to a pause in her stride. With large biceps and powerful legs, the man squatted low to lift under the caber's end. Alana's breath stuck as he heaved the soaring tree upward, taking several power-filled steps forward to build the momentum of his toss. His shoulders bunched as he threw his strength into lifting the end of the tall caper so that it flew upward toward the blue sky. His deep yell from the effort reached across the field, sounding very much like a war cry. Alana realized that all six of them had stopped in their tracks to watch as the tall caber flew over, landing in a perfectly straight toss. "'Tis a horse's head painted on his arm,' Martha said, her words breathless. Robert circled the roses as if guarding them, his rope leash dragging untended behind him to get caught on their skirts. The warrior turned, his arms reaching overhead where he grabbed his elbows in a stretch as he strode effortlessly back to the cheering men. "Oh," Alana murmured. "Who is he?" Kirsten tissed where she had stopped next to her. She bent her face closer to Alana, lowering her voice. "They are Sinclairs, so do not even look. All Sinclairs are tricksters, liars and scoundrels." "The enemy, then," Lucy Kellington said just behind them, her sharp English accent still fresh since she'd come to Scotland only 6 months prior. "Aye," Kirsten said. "To Campbell's, anyway. He is likely the chief who won the lairdship when his horrible uncle died almost 10 years ago. I heard his name is Shaw Sinclair. Don't know why they are this far south unless they are here to cause trouble." "Trouble?" Alana asked. There had always been whispers about the mighty Sinclairs from the north, their ancestors being godlike warriors with unnatural abilities to guide horses. But she thought that they were now virtually powerless, a penniless and landless clan. What type of trouble could they cause? Kirsten propped her hands on her hips. "Carrick told me that even though Campbells took their clan castle, Guernico, fairly to pay a debt incurred by the old laird, once he died, his nephew has been trying to steal it back ever since. There was a battle about 5 years ago to regain the castle, but the Sinclairs lost. You know the one at Altamarlach, Alana?" Alana nodded, remembering her father and Donald Campbell sending troops to defend their Campbell cousins' one castle in the northernmost edge of Scotland. Even Grey fought to defend the legally won bargain. "Why must all the men I have to stay away from be so enticingly brawny?" Cece asked, a prominent pout on her lips. "Perhaps he is coming south to attack Campbell's to win his clan castle back," Martha said in a hushed voice filled with drama. Alana had once suffered the loss of her clan's castle when Finlarig Castle was taken by the English crown because of lies that the Campbells were plotting against the king. She rubbed her arms as a smoke from a cookfire brought back the terror-filled memories of the cruel fire, a constant nightmare she tried to block. "Why would they attack Campbells in the south when there are plenty of them up on Sinclair land in the north to attack?" Kirsten said, wry irritation in her voice as she frowned at Martha. "Whatever his presence here means," Alana said, glancing first at Martha and Izzy, then sliding her gaze to fix meaningfully on Cece. "We shall stay well away from the Sinclairs while we are here." Hopefully they would listen to her. When they made plans to attend the festival, her brother had put Alana in charge. But then Carrick volunteered to come. Instead of acting like their escort, he acted as if he were their leader, and the other students had started to ignore Alana's guidance. Back at Finlarig Castle, Alana sort of blended in, especially with such strong women like Evelyn and Scarlett Worthington in charge of the school. There was nothing special about Alana, so she'd been looking for a chance to stand out a bit more and prove herself. She stood even straighter and cleared her throat, raising her voice over the girls' continued chatter. "We are here to represent the Highland Roses School." She started them walking again toward the knife-throwing area of competition. "Talk to the ladies you meet. Tell them how important it is to be able to read. Right, Izzy?" She looked at the girl, who nodded vigorously. Izzy had read an important message when an English officer abducted her last year. The knowledge she gained from the letter had saved their clan in the end. Martha picked up her steps to move slightly ahead, glancing back with a determined smile. "And how every student learns to defend herself. I think that is the most important skill taught at the school." Alana nodded, keeping her gaze on the targets far at the end of the throwing field. Although being able to read, especially all those books in the school library, brings us knowledge which can defend us nearly as well as a skean do. Kirsten smiled wryly. Evelyn would be so proud of you, she teased. Oh yes, I love the books, Cece said. Especially that art book. She couldn't contain her laughter, and Kirsten joined in before sucking her lips inward to stop. Alana shook her head but smiled. It was a festival, after all, and a perfect place to be silly. Tarts and fresh squeezed apple cider, called a woman from a tent as they passed. Izzy jumped up and down. I will take her, Cece said, grabbing her hand. Since Izzy's sister, Kat, had journeyed with the group travelling down to the Worthingtons' English estate, they all took turns looking after the girl. Izzy had become best friends with the young English orphan, Mouse, who'd returned with Kat from England last winter. But she and her friend, Michaela, had remained at the school with some other students and Mistress Jane, the new housekeeper. Slowly but surely, the school was growing. Meet us at the dagger throwing then, Alana said, and the two of them ran off, Cece just as excited as Izzy to get a tart and cider. Alana breathed in the crisp air, glancing at the snow-topped mountain range rising behind the forest. The gorse and heather had darkened on the meadow, and trees of gold, red, and orange encircled the fair, adding to the festive atmosphere. Salmon would start at sundown with huge bonfires and people dressed in costumes to frighten away the evil spirits. Many feared that ghosts walked the world when the boundary between spirit and human worlds thinned on Salmon. Alana would set a place for both her father and mother at the meal tonight in their memories. So much had changed in the 2 short years since he'd been killed at a Covenanter meeting outside Stirling. Alana scanned the contest area and couldn't help but notice the large Sinclair warrior, who had obviously won the cabre toss. He frowned as he spoke with some of his men, one of them gesturing toward the tents with a jabbing finger. Something had turned them out of sorts. No matter, she turned her gaze. The Sinclairs were no concern of hers or her students. She rested her palm on Robert's shaggy back as they marched forward past the stacked wood for the bonfires to the far side of the field. The dogs circled around her happily and licked her hand. Very well, she said, wiping her hand on her skirt. I love you too. Of all the dogs that she'd raised back at the school, Robert was the largest and the friendliest. No matter how many times the Campbell warriors asked, she wouldn't give him up to them to train for war. Alana stopped before a table covered with polished knives and daggers of every length and weight. She smiled at the man in charge of the competition, an older warrior who wore an impressive scar slashed across one cheek up to his eye. We would like to enter the contest, Alana said, her voice strong. The handful of men standing at the table turned to look at her, but Alana ignored them, keeping her gaze centered on the one in charge. Myself, Alana Campbell, and my 2 friends, Kirsten MacGregor and Martha Campbell. The man stared at her from under bushy grey eyebrows that curled in wild swirls. His lined mouth quirked to the side. When he didn't say anything, she cleared her throat. I am the sister of Grey Campbell, the chief of the Campbells of Breadalbane. We are students and instructors at the Highland Roses School in Killin. No one moved, and Alana kept her strong stare, despite the heavy thump of her heart. The man rubbed his chin and squinted his eye where the scar crossed it.
There's a competition for men, not meant for lasses or children.
His voice was a gruff bark, but Alana imagined that he was Killin's always ornery blacksmith, Craig, with his lethal frown but kind heart. She made a signal for Robert to sit, his head reaching up to her chest. She inhaled fully.
I request to see the rule book, then, where it says that one must possess a jack in order to throw a dagger.
Several of the men listening chuckled, and she heard one spit. Women were definitely the cleaner of the sexes, but she'd grown up around warriors, and she was used to their annoyances.
"'Tis not written down,' the old man said.
He tapped his grey, shaggy head.
"'The rules are right up here, and they say no lasses compete.'
Alana heard more people gathering behind her to watch the disagreement and had to signal Robert to sit again, although his large head kept sweeping left and right to take in whoever might become an enemy. Alana kept her focus on the bad-tempered rule-keeper. She wasn't a screaming shrew, nor was she strong enough to force her way into the competition. She needed a new tactic. Her frown turned into a condescending smile, and she tipped her head.
You are afraid, then? Afraid a lass might beat the mighty warriors here?
She swept her hand out to indicate the other men lined up to compete. Her breath stuttered when she saw that the Sinclair warriors had come over, including the tall caber toss winner. She let her gaze slide away to rake along the gathered men on her other side.
So, you are all afraid that a couple of lasses might beat you in the dagger toss?
She laughed lightly, playing the part that Scarlet had taught her back at the school. She looked at Martha and Kirsten.
"'Tis too bad that Scotland is made up of warriors who are frightened of women."
The men around them frowned, some of them grumbling, "A bloody hell," or "damn not." Although no one threatened them outright, the tone and tension were enough to make Robert stand, a low growl drawing up from his barrel chest. Cece and Izzy nudged through the crowd, along with Lucy, who strode with Carrick Campbell next to her. He shouldered his way forward, and Alana held up a hand to stop him from trying to come to the rescue. Lucy frowned, stopping next to Martha, and whispered in her ear, giving her fiercest stare outward. Alana let her gaze settle across the Highlanders who had shaken their heads at her.
"'Tis no wonder the English have been known to rout.
Let the lass throw a knife before some undisciplined bastard cuts out her tongue."
The large Sinclair's voice came like a deep rumble of thunder through the mountains, restrained power and authority in each word. He stood with his legs braced apart as if in battle, his muscled arms crossed over his chest. His beard was trimmed close to a strong jaw under a straight nose. Here and there a scar stood out against his tanned skin, and sharp black lines of a tattoo cut across his upper arm to form the head and neck of a primitive-looking horse, with an expression as fierce as the man. She raised her gaze to meet his.
"The undisciplined bastard would end up in an early grave," she said.
Pride filled her as she saw the other Highland Roses students form a circle, their backs to each other, as they looked outward at the gathered crowd. Robert's growl the only sound in the stiff hush. Each rose held a dagger in her hand and a vicious scowl on her face, even cheerful Cece. Sinclair kept his frown, but his eyes widened the slightest amount, making him look intrigued. With his bearded jaw, straight nose and eyes just a shade lighter than a stormy sky, Alana was struck by his beauty as he radiated raw power and intimidation. Even the white scar at his hairline enhanced his rugged good looks. "Damn, he's a Sinclair." She tore her gaze away to meet the squint of the old warrior in charge. She balanced her own ski and do in her grasp, feeling its weight like she did before throwing.
"Shall we draw blood and shame from these men, or will you let these feeble lasses give it a try?"
The old man cursed low, glancing toward the Sinclair warrior. The old man's bushy brows lifted, and Alana knew she'd won.
"Wouldn't want to taint Solomon with blood," he said. "Liable to bring all types of demons on spirits here."
He scratched his head, making his hair stand on end.
"But only two entries from each clan. 'Tis the rule for the men as well."
His gnarled hand swept along the blades.
"You can choose one of mine or use your own, lass."
The crowd backed up, and the ladies, Carrick and Robert, seemed to relax, although Alana knew they remained alert, as their self-defense instructors at the school had taught them. She looked to Robert.
"Stay," she commanded, and made the signal for him to sit.
With her heart still thumping, Alana stepped forward to the throwing line burnt into the dry grass. Everyone was watching her, including the bloody handsome Sinclair and his small army of rough Highlanders. Blast, she was nervous. She took a deep inhale, focusing her gaze on the target beyond. She would throw from the side, bringing the blade point to fly forward toward the center circle on the hay bale. Just like in training, where she'd practiced hundreds of times, it had become her most lethal skill. One of the other Sinclairs next to the chief snorted. A younger man in their group leapt about like an idiot in her periphery. Was the man already drunk on whiskey, or trying to distract her?
I bet a shilling she doesn't even make it to the target,
said a Sinclair, with a tattoo of a hollow-eyed skull on his forehead near his temple. Several men laughed, either at his words or his kinsman's antics. Others yelled out that they'd take the bet. Alana looked back down the field. Her eyes narrowed as she focused, ignoring them, but their taunts brought a flush to her cheeks. They were waiting for her to fail. The responsibility to represent not only the Highland Roses School, but all of womankind was a heavy burden to carry. Anger that women had to endure such unfairness hardened her stance. She heard Robert growl and hoped Carrick would hold the braided rope she'd tied around the dog's neck earlier. Carrick was the only one in their group strong enough to keep Robert back when the huge dog became riled. Alana took a deep breath. The Sinclair chief stepped up next to her, but still gave her plenty of room to throw. She raised her arm, her focus returning to the red-painted circle in the distance. In her periphery, she saw the other Sinclair jig around, his knees rising high. Men laughed, and several of the roses shushed them.
The enemy don't stay quiet, lasses, the skull-tattooed man said. Aye, they're bright bloody loud when throwing knives, another called. And more laughed.
Breathe in, breathe out. Alana focused. All she heard was the exchange of her breath. She raised her front foot, gathering momentum to lunge forward.
Stud!
Carrick yelled as she whipped the knife around. The large, shaggy bulk of Robert barreled into Alana's leg as the dog ran in a tight circle around her, his leash cutting under her skirt to wrap around her boots. The Skiandoo teetered in the air, landing with a soft whoomph in the grass at the base of the target. Chuckles erupted, and the fool turned a few sideways somersaults between her and the target, his arms and legs out like a scarecrow. Alana closed her eyes for a moment before finding the courage to turn around to meet the crowd.
I lost hold of the dog,
Carrick called over the talking and laughing men, some demanding their money for the bets they'd won.
A rethrow is in order. No rethrows, the old warrior said,
and pointed at Martha, who had her dagger out to throw, Kirsten nodding to her to take her turn. Robert ducked his head under Alana's hand, lifting it as his sweet brown eyes peered up at her. Alana sighed, curling her fingers into his coarse curls, petting him as they walked away from the throw line together.
Will you retrieve my ski and do when you pull yours from the target? She asked Martha.
You can have my turn, Martha said.
Alana shook her head, giving her a small smile.
Do your best.
Alana stepped through the clustered men, none of them willing to risk Robert's bite to get too close. She forced a pleasant expression onto her tight face for several ladies standing nearby.
The Highland Roses School teaches ladies everything, from reading and sewing to throwing knives and defending themselves.
Her words came out rather weak after her bumbled throw. One smiled and one whispered to another. They moved around to the side to watch Martha throw. Alana filled her cheeks with her inhale and exhaled long, blinking to rid her eyes of the ache of disappointment. A Highland Rose would never shed a tear for failing, but that didn't mean she felt no sting from it.
You shall not have pet the beast after he knocked you.
Alana turned, her heart skipping into a faster pace. Shaw Sinclair stood parallel to her, his arms crossed before a broad chest, as he watched the contest over the heads of the crowd. He was all muscle and strength, as if he were chiseled from tanned granite. A warrior in repose, it would say under his picture in the school's art book. Damn, he made her insides flutter and flip. He glanced her way, those intense eyes staring directly at her.
And your friend just hit the target.
Chapter 2. It took a full exchange of breath before the warrior's words sank in. Alana was caught between relief over Martha's success and annoyance over the man's unwanted advice and her ridiculous reaction to his ruggedness. He was an enemy to the Campbells, not some handsome warrior in her brother's ranks. although most of her brother's warriors either still thought of her as a little freckled girl or didn't dare come near her for fear her brother, the chief, would geld them. She pinched the pads of her fingers together and tipped her hand in the air. Robert sat next to her at the silent signal.
He was trying to protect me with all the tension and yelling about. He encircles me to keep me safe.
Aye,
Sinclair said.
But the dog must learn that you are the pack leader and not make decisions on his own. He must obey what you say or signal. If you reward him after he has disobeyed, he learns that he should disobey when he thinks it is warranted.
Sinclair held her gaze with those deep grey eyes of his.
He will begin to worry that he is pack leader and disobey more, trying to assert his supremacy.
Look away, she chided herself. Alana crossed her own arms and tilted her head to regard the man, focusing on another little scar that sat just over his eyebrow.
Is that how you treat your men?
She drew in a fuller breath when he looked back outward toward the target.
They each know their positions within the unit, he said.
She wondered what position the hopping man played. Idiot, jester, second in command.
Should I have beaten the dog, she asked, her hand rising to rest on Robert's head. Or tied him to a caber so that he'd choked himself trying to reach me.
Without a word, the man turned away from her, presenting his back but without moving away. The reprimand in the silent withdrawal was loud and clear. It was like the snub that Evelyn said ladies threw at one another at the English court. Even without a single utterance, the rejection left Alana feeling cold. Robert let out a little whine as he watched. The dog stood, and Alana had to make the hand movement twice before he would sit again. Shaw turned back around.
Like that, he said. A pack animal understands exile. When he misbehaves, he should be ignored and exiled from the pack by you. To learn, he must adhere to your orders as the leader.
Without another word, the man's gaze slid down from her face to her breasts. Like a swath of wildfire across a brittle dry moor, Alana felt the path, and a flush heated her cheeks. Was he inspecting her womanly form? Bad-mannered, leering rogue. His assessing gaze travelled back up to her eyes. He nodded without a word and stalked away from the crowd toward the Sinclair tents, leaving Alana open-mouthed with shock and a bit breathless. The wind tugged at the close-cropped waves of his dark hair, and his kilt fit snugly around narrow hips. The strength in his calves was obvious through his bleached woolen socks that rose above the edges of his boots. His straight back tapered down from broad, muscular shoulders, and his bared arms in the sleeveless tunic were tanned and chiseled. Tam, she was inspecting his form.
Did you see?
Martha asked, running up to her. She handed Alana's ski and do back to her. Alana smiled, glad to have something to pull her attention.
Not over top of everyone, but I heard you hit it square. Not exactly in the middle like you can do, Martha said,
and frowned at Robert as he stood, wagging his thick tail and panting at the roses and Carrick who followed Martha.
Sorry, Alana, Carrick said. That horse of a dog ripped his way free. They should have let you throw again.
She waved his suggestion off.
Martha proved that women can throw daggers as well as men.
The woman beamed with the praise.
So the huge Highlander who said you should throw and not lose your tongue, was he not the Sinclair chief?
Lucy Kellington asked, her English accent making several men nearby frown.
Shaw Sinclair, the chief of the Sinclairs in the north of Scotland, Carrick said, confirming Kirsten's gossip. And someone you should all stay far away from.
He frowned, his hard gaze moving from woman to woman, as if he were 20 years older and had sired each of them.
The Campbells and Sinclairs are enemies. Our cousins to the north bought their castle, and when the Sinclairs battled for it back, they lost.
Against him? Martha asked, looking around as if trying to find the Sinclair chief. I guess not all the Sinclairs are built like him, Kirsten said. And the northern Campbells likely have muskets as they are considered wealthy. Losing one's castle seems to be a reoccurring incident in Scotland, Lucy said, referring to Finlarig Castle, where the Highland Roses School was started.
Cece laughed, but covered her mouth when Alana frowned.
But Scots do not set the castle on fire and throw people inside.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?